people like to invest with those they know, like, and trust and connect with. Because at the end of the day, people are investing with you, right? Yes, they're investing in your company, et cetera, but you are the biggest risk factor anytime someone's giving you their money to go invest in a project.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Sean D. Martell is a multifamily investor with over 300 multifamily units. He's co-founder of Takeoff Capital, host of the Real Estate Takeoff podcast, and author of the book California Gold. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy for this, Sam. I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. The pleasure is mine. Glad to have you, I think, back on the show. You've been on this show before, I think maybe 2 years ago or so.
Yeah,
approximately.
It was a while.
Yeah, we'll have to look that up.
I completely forgot about it, too, because I reached out to you, and you're like, dude, you've been on my show before.
Well, and you know, it happens. I'm with you. You host a great podcast. I was pleased to be a guest on the show last week. You ask great questions and make it very, very easy on the guest. I will say that. I've certainly, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there, but you run a great one, and I certainly appreciate coming on that show. And again, that is, if you want to plug it one more time, what's the name of that podcast again?
The Real Estate Takeoff Podcast. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Check out Sean's podcast. Sean, there are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell our listeners, where did you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
Easy. So I started from a poor family in Louisville, Kentucky. Grew up, couldn't really afford to put myself through college, joined the Navy as an air traffic controller. Got out of the Navy after 5 years doing that, did it for the FAA. Started making some decent money saving, wanting to figure out where to start investing because I wanted to, you know, climb the ladder and get to, you know, even more wealth. And found the Bigger Pockets podcast years ago and got obsessed, studied hard. And then eventually I went all in on my first real estate investment. And this was before I even bought my first house. I liquidated my 401k and I bought a 32 unit apartment with a couple buddies. Started the podcast around the same time. And then shortly after that, got a multifamily mentor. Fast forward a little bit, and we started syndicating properties with that mentor. And here I sit today with about 300 multifamily units, a boutique hotel, and numerous Airbnbs to encompass my portfolio.
Man, that's really cool. I love that story. The bootstrapping story is one, of course, that speaks, you know, to my heart, because I just get tired of people being told that, hey, you know, you're limited by whatever the limiting factors are they place on you, where you come from, what your religion, your race, whatever it is. Like, oh, well, that's nonsense. Anybody can do anything. So we all have incredible capacity for success. So I think it's really cool how you have done this. Air traffic controllers. I'm sure we talked about this on your last show. Air traffic controllers are paid pretty well. Like you get tenured in that, and it's not a low paying job. What about that? Were you like, hey, this is going to be long term, I want to do this another way?
Yeah. So the thing about air traffic control that just makes it so tough, obviously you're under a lot of pressure. Everybody knows it's a really stressful job. That's no secret. But what makes this even worse is that there is a hyper shortage of air traffic controllers in the nation. So when you sign up to be an air traffic controller, you sign up and agree to mandatory overtime. And basically across the country, everybody's working 6 day work weeks as an air traffic controller. My days off were Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So I would usually only get off Wednesday and be working the rest of the days. So my work-life balance was basically zero. I would work crazy shifts. You know, Sunday, I would wake up and be at work at 5:30 a.m., work till 1:30 p.m., and then go back to work at 10 p.m. at night and work the graveyard shift that very same night. And I did that every week. And the outlook for that was that I was going to be working into my 50s before I could finally get off on weekends. And this just didn't make sense to me. And it's great money, don't get me wrong. But you really become a slave to that job. And you look at the people retiring in their 50s and they look like they're in their late 60s. And that was really, you know, a light bulb moment for me that what do I want? Do I want to sit here as a W-2 making really great money, or do I want to try to do something else so I can finally get my time freedom back?
No, man, I think that's huge. And that's what you just mentioned there, I think, is just a sound piece of advice. Look at the people 20, 30 years older than you in whatever career it is you're looking at and go, And not just one, because there can be some outliers, but look at all of them as an aggregate and go, do I want to be what that group looks like physically, mentally, emotionally, lifestyle wise in 20 or 30 years? And if the answer is no, get out.
I mean, I could not agree more. That's a great way to put it, because that is what you will become if you stay in a grinding job like that. I mean, hell, if you're mining coal and you look at guys that are retiring from that, and you've got to, you know, that's obviously more physical,
right?
But it's the same thing. Like, you know, do you really want to spend the majority of your life doing that work?
Right. And we still live in a country where you can choose. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the other thing, is that you get to pick still in the States. There's places in the world where you don't get to pick, and you're going to be doing whatever it is, mining coal or air traffic controller, whether you want to or not. So, and that's too bad, actually, to hear about the air traffic control job, because I mean, there's a lot that is on your shoulders, and I mean, everything obviously that you say and do is recorded on live lines. Mm-hmm. You make one mistake, man, and they will roast you. And rightfully so, because I mean, you do have planes in the air that need to not be connecting with each other. So it,
of course.
Yeah, but that's wild, man. How did you get out? At what point in time did you say, hey, look, I've got enough coming in from my what was now side hustle, now become full-time real estate job? You said, hey, I can quit being an air traffic controller.
That was in 2022, actually. In March of 2022, I had that was after we had syndicated a couple properties. In January of 2022, we sold that 32 unit that we had bought a couple years before, made some profit on that. And then also had, you know, at that time I had 3 Airbnb listings that were producing a lot of cash flow as well. And, you know, I was right around the net income that I was making from air traffic control. But, you know, I knew that if I wanted to grow the real estate business further to where it's, you know, that is my full-time job and grow that company, that I needed to make that jump. So, that's why I made it last year, just going all in to really give the real estate everything that I've got. And it has paid dividends.
Okay, cool. I want to hear about that, because there can, at times, we've seen people flounder when they make that jump. They get out, they're like, hey, I'm going to go do this. And it's like, oh man, crud. Do they do this or do that or do this? They don't get the momentum. How did you carry that momentum forward once you said, all right, I'm out? And congrats on doing that. I bet that was a fun day to finally walk away and just say, all right, guys, I'm going to do my own thing. But how have you established the momentum in the strategy that you wanted to employ, I guess, over the last, what is that, 18, 17 months?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it really just, when I mean going all in order to keep that momentum going, I had to start doing everything that I could to get my name out there and get in front of as many people as possible. So dedicating more time to being guests on podcasts, writing more content as far as blogs, my ebook, going to more speaking events, going to more, like, really anything and everything that I could do regarding the real estate strategies I was doing, I dedicated my time to, joining business clubs, everything. So by doing so, that was getting me in front of more investors, making more meaningful connections with other operators. All of that stuff really, I think, was necessary and critical for me to keep that momentum going and keep doing deals. So last year we closed on 2 deals. And all of that stuff definitely would have been harder, you know, if I was doing my W-2 job. You know, but there is give and take. By leaving that W-2 job, I left behind a lot of money from the W-2, which makes it easier to qualify for personal loans, things like that. That's all out the window now. So, you know, it is a double-edged sword, and there is some pros and cons of doing it, but ultimately I needed to be able to go all in.
Right, right. No, I think that's fantastic. And what I would summarize most of that at is, I can't speak today. What I would summarize most of that as, here we go, I'll find the right word, is engagement. Like, you just got to get out and engage. You mentioned getting on podcasts, making sure you're writing your blogs. We'll get to your ebook here in a little bit, because I want to talk about that. But I love that strategy, because the name of the show is How to Scale Commercial Real Estate. So there's a lot of people potentially in your shoes listening to this going, hey, you know what, I do want to make this leap, but what do I do? Either, you know, you started having your portfolio already, you know, working before you quit your W-2, which is smart, but they want to know what those next engagement steps are. And I think you outlined some of those. What did you do in order to get on more podcast shows out of the gate without as much maybe traction or industry experience as maybe what you felt like you should have in order to do so?
A couple strategies that I use. Number one, I like to reach out to podcast hosts directly myself. The reason why is I host my own podcast and I get bombarded in my email inbox, as well as, you know, my virtual assistant getting bombarded with people that want to come on the podcast, and they put their copy and paste intros to try and get on the podcast. And I just found that that wasn't super effective with me. So I thought, hey, I don't want to be one of those people. So I'm just going to do it myself and reach directly out to these people to maybe stand a little bit better of a chance. So that was one method. And also trying to just and focus on highlighting my unique story, because I know that when people go, when people have someone on a podcast, you know, if you just say I'm, you know, a real estate investor and I've been listening to your podcast, well, yes, so is everybody else. So I try to highlight what might make my story a little bit more unique or a topic. I think that in combination with having my own podcast definitely helped, because, you know, I'm able to make better connections that way. Maybe even do a podcast swap and have that host come on my show. Think all of these strategies combined increase the probability just a little bit that I would get on those shows. And that's really it.
Right. No, I think that's fantastic. And I think telling that unique story certainly stands out. Yeah, you're right. If you had sent me an email, Sean, said, hey, Sam, I'm a multifamily investor and I'd love to come tell you, you know, about multifamily investments. I mean, God bless you, that there's lots of opportunity in the multifamily space and what
for
you do.
Sure.
Is great, but it's not a story. It's not a unique story. You got it. How do you feel like a learning to tell your unique story has also helped you raise capital?
Ooh, that's a good one. It's helped me raise capital because people like to invest with those they know, like, and trust and connect with. Because at the end of the day, people are investing with you, right? You know, yes, they're investing in your company, et cetera, but you are the biggest risk factor anytime someone's giving you their money to go invest in a project. So the sponsor is so important. And I like to tell everything about my story. And I even put this on my socials and things of not only what I'm doing in real estate, but me as a person, how I grew up, the challenges that I faced, the mistakes I've made. I like being really transparent about big mistakes I've made in my real estate investing, because I know people want to hear that. So I think really when it comes to the unique story, it's being personable, like, you know, hearing about my struggles, being poor growing up and having absolutely zero money. I mean, when I was in college, I was working at Cracker Barrel as a server. My parents couldn't give me jack diddly to help with college because they didn't have any money. And starting from something like that and getting to, you know, growing your portfolio resonates with people because everybody listening is in the same shoes. So, and I remember back whenever one of the first podcasts I heard on Bigger Pockets was a PE teacher, and to this day, I'm still friends with them, that grew a portfolio of hundreds of multifamily units and retired. And right. I loved it because I was a guy just like him that didn't have a high paying job. And I think that people like that.
Right. Yeah. You're teaching kids to play kickball in elementary school, and then you found real estate and found a way to really create wealth for yourself, which I think, shoot, man, if I could play kickball and get paid like I could in real estate, I'd certainly do that. That'd be awesome, right? Yeah. But that option just presently doesn't exist. So outside of that, let's talk a little bit about your strategy. You got your hands in some unique things. You mentioned those there in your bio or in your intro there about boutique hotels, Airbnbs, multifamily properties. Give me some unique things you're doing, because I know you wrote an ebook called California Gold, which most... Okay. A lot of investors here in California, they're like, no.
Yep. And I'm glad you brought that up. So I'll be as short as I can. So I've always felt the same way about California. I've always thought to myself, no way. And until this year, outside of my Airbnb here, I had zero interest because of the same things everybody else, you know, the politics, the landlord-tenant laws, et cetera. And then 2 years ago, San Diego implemented a new municipal code. It's the only city in the country that has this. And that got me interested. So for a little bit of context, San Diego is geographically constrained, but it's growing. It's constrained by the ocean to the west. You got mountains to the east, Mexico to the south, and a military base to the north. And all of the flat available land's been built on. So what San Diego did that's so unique is they took accessory dwelling units, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard about, otherwise known as ADUs, and they expanded it to where you can put unlimited ADUs up to the floor area ratio. So what this means is I can go and buy a single family home, you know, less than a mile from the beach, and I can add 10 units or more to that property if it's big enough, and put new product on the line in some of the most coveted communities that otherwise get no new buildings. And so when I saw that, and I saw that, okay, not only can I build, you know, I can build these for 150 to 200,000 per unit with nice finishings, and I can sell them for north of $400,000 a unit, and I get to put my own tenants in there. So I'm not buying, you know, a value add multifamily where who knows when I can get those tenants out, because here in California, you can't just say, hey, I don't want to renew because I want to renovate it. So doing value add here carries more risk. And then, you know, we can maybe get into more of the minutiae, but this strategy carried just so much less risk. It's in my own backyard where most of my investors in, and it just made so much sense numbers wise that was the light bulb that went off. And I named my book California Gold because I call it the new California Gold Rush. There's only so many lots that qualify and make sense to do this investment. So, you know, the well will run dry eventually. And right now it's a rush to find the lots that you can put all these units on and you can make a killing.
Wow, that's fantastic. Give me a case study on that. Like just give me some examples of things, assets that you've bought and how you did it.
So I got a project right now in an area called Ocean Beach in San Diego. I bought a two bedroom, one bath house on a 7,000 square foot lot. And it's a half a mile from the beach on a hill. I'm adding 11 units to it to where it's going to total 12 units. In the back of the house, there's a one unit being added to the existing house. And then the huge lot behind it, we're building a three-story structure with units on all three floors. Second and third floor units will have unobstructed views of the ocean. Now, what I love about this, though, anybody that's heard about the negatives of multifamily development knows that a lot of the risk is holding costs, because you're sitting around waiting for the government to give you permits while you make no money and you're just burning through it, right? This strategy is different because I bought an existing house that I can rent out. And not only am I renting it out, I got an Airbnb permit. So the property is actually cash flowing while we're waiting around to get those permits. So we reduced one of the biggest risks, we've mitigated substantially by doing that. Now, the rest of the plan is to, you know, obviously we've designed the units, they're getting permitted now, build the units, fill them with tenants, put in on permanent debt and cash flow that property. And now we have a property that these units, I'll finish it by saying this, these units in this Ocean Beach community, 10% of units there have air conditioning and in-unit washers and dryers. Every single one of our units is brand new, in-unit air conditioning and heating, washer and dryer in-unit in Ocean Views. And that's just something you're not getting with most units there.
Wow. Okay. Let's dig into, so I guess there's a few questions. That one, that's a completely awesome strategy. I think finding those, the riches are in the niches, as the phrase goes. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what you've got on the acquisition side of things. Are you basically just paying retail price for that property just because of the upside potential?
Yes. Exactly. Right. We are paying retail. Now, we paid a little bit less than retail. We were able to negotiate that property down 150 below asking, but we were also able to get seller financing on that deal, which helped a ton. 80% seller financing, 5.4% interest only payments. So that was infinitely better than what we were getting offered by banks.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. And I've got a buddy in a completely different strategy, but this is something we're kicking around a lot. He's like, man, he goes, you know, because we are very accustomed to going out and finding off market, you know, either distressed or, you know, whatever it is, you name it, for how we can get a discount on the buy side. And we're looking at his strategy and how effective it is. And I'm like, dude, just get on the MLS and start buying retail. Your cash flow is insane on what you're doing. So why waste time, you know, trying to nickel and dime your way to success when you've already got the plan built and you can afford to pay retail? There's enough margin there is what I'm getting at.
If the numbers make sense.
Right, so cool. So you can buy retail, your product still makes sense, or your margin still makes sense at retail. When you build those 7 units, how many square feet are those approximately per unit?
So our two bedrooms are a little over 600 square feet, And then we're providing a number of studios that are about 346 square feet.
Right.
Now, I know a lot of your listeners are thinking, my goodness, that's small. But that is sort of the trend here in Southern California to keep the, get the units a little bit more affordable. But to combat the how small they are, we're implementing a ton of strategies and design to make them feel a little bit bigger. So floor-to-ceiling windows, bringing in tons of natural light. And the studios have these really cool, excuse me, Murphy beds that convert to couches. That way, the that unit can feel big for the tenant.
Yep. Yeah. I love a good Murphy bed. That's cool. All right. So, and again, a 7,000 square foot lot is not that big. Like I'm sitting like my lot here is only 9,000 square feet and I'm going, wow. Okay. That's 2/7 or I guess whatever, 2/9. Anyway, it's 2,000 square feet smaller. Golly, I can't do the math here on the fly. It's too early in the day, but 2,000 square foot smaller. I'm thinking how do you fit 7 units plus a house? Where do they park?
So good question. With this strategy, one of the things that also make it great is the city doesn't require parking so long as you're within a transit priority area. So TPA for short, that just means you're within a half a mile of major public transportation, no matter what kind it is. So this the tenants are going to have to park on street parking, but there's a plenty of street parking in this area. It's far enough away from the beach and a community where everyone will be able to find parking, but that's not really a huge downside for this market because that's street parking is what everybody has. If you've got, you know, private parking, that's huge and by the beach.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Cool, man. That's awesome. I love that. The finding something unique and then finding a way to scale that. So, man, you've answered a lot of questions. You've thought really, I think obviously you've thought really well through this strategy and it's effective. So you're then taking these units and you're selling them off. Is that what I heard?
Yeah. Some of these, because of our investor appetite, you know, some investors don't want to hold as long, some do. So some projects we're going to be doing shorter holds that are more like a 3 to 4 year hold where we're going to lease it up, get it stabilized, and then sell it off for a quick pop on their money.
Yep.
And then some of our deals, we're going to be doing like 5 to 7 year holds or even longer so we can just hold these, cash flow on them, and then reap the rewards of the increase in rents that we're going to continue seeing.
Man, that's awesome. Sean, we've got about 3 minutes left here on the show. I want to hear a little bit more about what our investors can find inside of your ebook and how they can gain access to that.
So to gain access to the ebook, it's really easy. Go to investorshawn.com. Simple. And I spell my name S-H-A-W-N, investorshawn.com. And the ebook is going to tell you everything about this strategy, all the basics. You can read this ebook in 15 minutes. And it's going to tell you not only like what the rules are, the municipal code, it's going to show you the websites you can go to find out how many units you could put on, the calculations, all of that stuff, ways you can mitigate risk. All of that is within that ebook, compacted down as much as I could get it. And then, you know, also while you're at it, make sure to follow me on Instagram, Sean_DMartell. Hopefully we could throw that in the show notes or something. But I talk a lot about this strategy on my social media as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, we'll make sure we include your name and the spelling of that for those that are not sitting in front of a computer or able to actually access the show notes. DMartell is DIMARTILE. So when you're looking up Sean, that's how you spell his last name. Sean, thank you again for coming on the show today, man. The day was a blast. I certainly loved hearing about your strategy, you know, going to the Navy, becoming a air traffic controller, what it took for you then to get out and just building your wealth such that you could exit your W-2. Looking 20 years in advance, saying, I don't want to be that person. You gave us some great insights on capital raising, on how to be authentic and just being yourself, your unique story, crafting that unique story and telling it such that investors can relate to you, man. And then also just the, you know, what to do out of the gate, getting on podcasts, blogs, writing in ebooks, engaging in the community, man. You've dropped a lot of great things here today. Outside of downloading the ebook there at your website link, is there any other ways you'd like our investors to get in touch with you or learn more about you?
No, I just want to emphasize one more time to follow me on Instagram. I'm putting a lot of work into it. You're going to see some super cool content that's really high quality. And outside of that, man, you'll get everything else off of investorshawn.com. And thank you so much, Sam, for like plugging all this stuff and all your kind words. I do appreciate it, brother.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen,
If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.